Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Living and Thriving with Rusty.
Wow, good afternoon, good morning, good evening to all my blessed beloveds out there in radio land. You're listening to Living and Thriving with Rusty. And guess what? I'm Rusty. And also guess what? Today is a celebration of international women, all of the beautiful, amazing, incredulous, fabulous, incredible, meaningful, striving, thriving, living women all over this world that make this world round, that, you know, keep movement going. Today is your day. I'm in celebration. I salute to you, all of my women out there who I just admire, adore, respect, love, and genuinely wish that I could be as beautiful and amazing as all of you. In combination, we fill the universe with so many bright stars, and I could not be more grateful to be sharing this day with you. Today, I have my friend Jean Dane on. Yes, I'm a vampire all of a sudden. Jean Day on. She is a co-author of Tainted Eloquence with me, and I'm super excited to learn more about her and her story and her adventure and what she likes to do and what she doesn't like to do and how she feels about the universe. As always, I get to walk this path with you, sharing beautiful stories from amazing people from all over the world so that you can live and thrive and become a better version of you, because that's really all we're about. I have to say, I am grateful to all of you who have emailed me with requests, not only for my books. Oh my God, that's just been really a blessing and very humbling experience, but also asking me to speak and to go on your TV shows. And I'm going to be in North Carolina this October on a TV series, and that's very exciting. And then I'm going to be in Connecticut about the same time of year this fall for a gluten-free, allergy-free wellness event to be a keynote speaker there. I love, love, love working with Nikki and her team. So looking forward to that trip. And then I'm going up to North Conway to speak to a whole group of entrepreneurs and managers and learn and help them learn to live and thrive and be a better version of them. So it's filling up. My schedule is filling up, and I'm grateful, and it's because of you. And thank you for sharing my blogs and my radio show. Because of you, this is happening for Chloe and I, and we could not be more grateful. So thank you, thank you, thank you. Jean, I'm hoping you're out there, girlfriend, because I'm dying to get a hold of you and learn and learn and learn. You've got some stories, some great stuff.
I am here.
Happy International Women's Day, girl.
I know. Happy International Women's to you, too.
Namaste, my Buddhist friend. We both share Buddhism as a practice of love and joy and fulfillment. So this is going to be an exciting show.
Right. Yes, absolutely.
So who are you and what do you do?
Well, the main thing I want people to do is to know about me is that I am a lecturer at Georgia Highlands College. I've been doing that for the past 8 years, and before that I was in private practice as a mental health therapist, and I've just been working in the field of psychology for about 17 years now. So,
yeah, but if you look at your pictures, you must have started when you were 12. You're very young looking saying that.
Oh, I thank you for that, but no, actually, I am celebrating my 41st birthday the end of this month, at the end of March. I celebrate my 41st birthday.
You're going to be 410 years old. That's so exciting. I just turned 390, so, you know, we're not too far apart.
No, actually, 41. I will be 41 at the end of this month. So
that's awesome. Happy birthday, but I'm sure I get to say it again later.
Thank you so much.
So tell us a little bit about, you know, what motivates you, what inspires you to help other people and lecture about the world and psychology, and, you know, what was really the motivating factor to do this and be that type of healer?
Well, the most, I have to say, you know, I've been a practitioner of Nichiren Buddhism for the past 15 years, And basically, quite honestly, that is what has gotten me through the last 15 years of my life of ups and struggles and struggle with depression and mental illness. And I've just been completely blessed these last few years with being able to share my story, but also convert it into writing, and but talking a lot about psychology, which is my passion. So, you know, being able to help others that may not have the basic information about psychology that I've learned throughout my studies.
Well, and I think it's very important. I mean, you were really honest and open about your depression and your struggles, and it's not something to be ashamed of. And what I love and adore about you is that, you know, you took this situation and you've made the most out of it. Talk to us a little bit about kind of that aha moment that you had where you're like, no, I'm not going to let this win. I'm going to be it.
Well, I've been struggling with depression since probably I was in high school at about maybe 15 years of age. I didn't have very many friends, and I was just, my mother struggled severely with debilitating depression. We would have places to live, and then she would have one of her depression episodes, and we would lose our place to live. And so, but I didn't realize at the time that was what was going on with me, that at the teenage years I was experiencing depression. I didn't have any friends to hang out with. I was kind of alienated. I didn't have, and part of that is the driving issue. I didn't have my own transportation, so I couldn't go to where my friends were going, and that limited what I was able to do. And but my mother suffered from debilitating depression, and I basically started out just feeling alone and alienated. And it's something that I've battled throughout my entire life, and have struggled with. I mean, I encountered Buddhism about 15 years ago, and it has significantly improved my state of life. And because I was so consumed, honestly, Rusty, I was so consumed with myself and what my own struggles were that I couldn't possibly think of the capacity to help other people. I didn't know that there was a way to help other people overcome their fundamental darkness. And that fundamental darkness can include depression, anxiety, or anything that's hindering you from being your best self. And I really didn't think that I had... I mean, because I was depressed, so I thought, how can I possibly offer anyone else advice? But really, that's the way that we go about healing, is by service to others. And so gradually, I started being able to recognize that I needed to reach out to those that were suffering even more severely than I was, and encourage them to chant and encourage them to become involved in Buddhism in order to overcome their deepest fundamental darkness.
Well, I think what's beautiful about this world is, I don't know if it was the last radio show I was on, I talk to so many people. I'm very blessed that way. But we were talking about the beauty of reality. And reality is, there is no such thing as normal. There's no such thing as perfect. This is a construct that we've made to try to get a handle of our inconsistent nature. And we're just
right
here. We're just beings. We're having a human experience. And you know, with depression and all of these things, we tend to label these things as something to be, you know, sad about, or yeah, exactly. And it's not. It's a beautiful part of the human expression. It's just who you are.
Right.
It's how things worked out, and the way you're dealing with it is beautiful, because we have talked about meditation before, and it's one of my favorite things to do, especially when things get really tough. What when you coach and when you lecture, what kinds of things do you advise the students to do first and foremost, aside from lecturing and understanding that, you know, healers come from those places that we talk about? That's why we become healers. We go through the same sadness. We go through life and experience it, and that's why we get into what we do. But what do you have, like a top five step-by-step suggestion list?
To be honest with you, usually when I have to work with students, I chant between 30 minutes to an hour. I aim for an hour every day when I chant, because I want to pull them into my life condition rather than they pull me into their life condition. And as you know, probably yourself and some of your listeners, it's easy to get caught up in a group dynamic, which is, you know, of negativity or fatigue or, you know, just not knowing what they want to do. And so I chant to be able to involve my classroom into my dynamic and to what is my life condition, which is higher than theirs, because I do chant. And so I try to involve them by asking questions, and also by one of the things that is important to me is to engage each person that I encounter with compassion, and to encourage them, no matter who they are or what life condition they're at, to encourage them to operate at a higher life condition. And sometimes that's easy and sometimes it's hard, because we have people that are abusing substances. We have people that are in the lower world, which in Buddhism we call hell or hungry spirits or negativity. And so what I try to do is to, instead of allow them to pull me down to where they are at, I try to encourage them to be where I am at, which is my higher life condition. And I do the same thing with my students when I lecture, because students are or can be, you know, very exhausted. You know, they have numerous responsibilities bestowed upon them, expectations, and, you know, so what I try to do is to encourage them, you know, you're capable of doing anything that you set your mind to, and if I can help in that process, I would love to, and let me know how I can help you in that way. And so I find that when I open myself up to dialogue, which sometimes is, I honestly have to say, Rusty, sometimes that can be very hard to do when you're talking to a person that absolutely disagrees with your way of life. And but what I try to do is still encourage them and try to get them to my way of thinking, which is in terms of service to others and encouraging other people.
Well, one of the things that I found most valuable in coaching, and I was talking to somebody about this earlier, is the fact that I am really authentically me. I don't think I'm better than you. I don't think I'm higher than you. I don't think I'm lower than you. I have no judgment whatsoever, and that's part of the Buddhist culture. And one of the things that I find beautiful is, if I'm not resonating with you right now, maybe the seed I'm planting will resonate you when you're ready to hear it.
Absolutely.
My presence and my connection with you will always be because we are all connected. Whether or not you're willing to hear, that's your problem. That's your. It's not a problem. It's your life condition. It's your life, exactly. And I'm not here to judge you, and I don't care. It's not that I don't care. It's just I have no emotional connection with your life. That's your path, your journey. I'm just walking next to you.
Right, you know? And I absolutely agree with that, because sometimes all you can do, if a person isn't willing to accept your way of thinking, all you can do is plant the seed. Like, I'm here, I'm available. Now, sometimes when it comes to teaching, I have to push my students beyond what their comfort zone is.
Right.
And that can be very difficult, because they are used to certain instructors doing things a certain way, and they expect when they come to my class that I will do the same thing. And sometimes it's very different, and I have higher expectations. And so what I have to do is plant the seed of, I'm giving you something that will benefit you in the future, and if I can do that, then my job is done. But I want you to know.
Again, and they have to be open to it, for sure, especially when you're dealing with the confusing, sometimes confusing topic of Buddhism. Some individuals mistakenly think that it's something that it's not, rather than a practice of connecting with yourself and your inner spirit and the universe and nature. There's a lot of confusion around it. So I love the fact that you're actually teaching about chanting and teaching about Buddhism and talking about it. But definitely,
Teaching them, I mean, it would be, I mean, there are some instructors that go into their class and they say, this is who I am. I'm a feminist.
Right.
I'm a liberal, I'm a Democrat, I'm this. I don't take that approach, because I feel like if I walked into a classroom where the instructor was automatically assuming certain traits, that may alienate me. So what I try to do is make it all inclusive and say, you know, I want you to know certain things about me so that you understand when I express my opinion, where I'm coming from.
Right.
That doesn't mean that I don't want to hear your opinion. I do, because we'll get into some serious debates, and I love it when we have a student in a class that is the opposite view of what the whole class is thinking about.
Right.
That's the only way to create dialogue.
Well, and it's fun that we're having this conversation, because I don't know if you read my blog post today, but that's exactly what I was talking about. It's like there's a point of having a healthy debate, which I believe in, and I love a healthy debate. I won every debate and debate club you could ever imagine. I should have been a lawyer. I should have been a politician. Should have, could have, would have, will kill you. But I chose the path that I chose. And I love a healthy debate. I love critical thinking. I love constructive thinking. I have a difficult time with destructive thinking. And that is where, you know, it can get really challenging when individuals are just purely, it's my way, the highway. I can't think outside of the box. I can't think outside of myself. How do you respond to students who are like, you know, they're the only ones who are allowed to have those feelings?
Well, you know what I'm talking about. I know exactly what you're talking about. And we, in fact, this past week we had a student, we were talking about women in male-dominated fields. And she said, I don't think that women should be allowed in the military to fight in infantry. That's just an example. And she was very, very reluctant and very hesitant to share her opinion about it. But I really encouraged her. I said, this is the forum to where you can share your opinion openly, and I want you to. And then once she spoke up, some of the women said, well, I understand your perspective. And some of them agreed and some of them disagreed. And some of the males spoke up. but it sparked a dialogue, which is all that I was trying to do, you know. And I feel like the most important thing is to be open to dialogue. That is the most important thing. And I'm not always a perfectionist in dealing with dialogue. When I encounter a conservative person that totally disagrees with my way of life, it's very hard to listen and be open to that way of thinking. But if you don't allow that person to speak and share their viewpoint, how can change begin? You know, the only way that change can begin is through dialogue.
Well,
so
and it really needs to be a very healthy dialogue. I find that there are a lot of situations now and circumstances where if somebody is just very adamant that their belief is the only belief to be had, there's no safety for you. I mean, we're seeing that in society now where people are being beheaded because they don't believe specifically the way other groups believe. And that's where it gets
right.
really scary, I think. And I also think it sequesters our voice. I think in
right.
a lot of ways, having that as a model for our society, we are starting to choose to fear and live in fear rather than having that open, healthy conversation, the debate, and the compassion and the love. And I,
exactly.
you know, I honestly think that social media has a big part of that because we can hide behind a screen and we can hide and not have those emotions.
Right. And I absolutely, one of the things that I'm trying to accomplish on my campus is to have a conservative Republican, to have a Democrat, and to have some young black males, African-American males, to be able to speak on a panel about the same subject. And I know, like, what a challenge that is because I'm like, you know, these people are coming from totally different perspectives. But I honestly believe, I'm like, through seeing each other's perspective, that's the only real way to create change. And
it's the only real
so,
way to grow and have compassion and understanding. And in order for
right,
our
and some people,
to evolve,
no matter some people, no matter what you do, are resistant to change. But
right.
I'm like, if it's in their face, and they have to say, okay, you know, I do agree or I don't agree with this, or this is the part I agree with. But what I'm trying to promote on my campus is dialogue. Like, let's have dialogue about this and how can we change this so that we are all on the same common ground and can influence change in a way that's positive to all people.
Well, and I think that comes with compassion and understanding, which I really am feeling like I'm seeing less compassion and less understanding in this world, and it scares me as a parent, as a person in the society, as a healer, as a coach, as you know, as a human being. I'm really becoming nervous that we've lost our sense of love and compassion for each other. I don't care that you have brown hair. I really don't. Good for you. You have brown hair. I'm a redhead. You know.
Right.
But does that make me any more or less human? More or less relatable to God, more or less relatable to the universe. So that's, you know, it's still a struggle with human race.
I absolutely agree with you because I think that we've lost that and that we're so passionate. You know, one of the things that I talk about in my class is that sometimes we're so passionate about our beliefs that we're unwilling to listen to the other side, but I get a lot of political things on my page, but I'm always reluctant to do the whole slamming of the other person's position. Like, I don't encourage that. I don't nurture that belief, because I'm from the philosophy of let's focus on what we believe and allow them to speak their viewpoints, and then let's have a dialogue about it. But
I think that's the right way to be in any society, because you're going to have difference of opinion. You're going to have different feelings and thoughts and expressions and movement and motion and desires and wants and beliefs.
Exactly.
There's no right or wrong answer. It's just how you're experiencing it. And I would love if people shared with me their experience. It doesn't mean I agree with them.
Right.
It doesn't mean
that
experience resonates with me. But you know what? Thanks for sharing. And I'm open to that. I'm open to having that conversation. So, very cool. So, talk to me a little bit about what it was like to be part of Painted Eloquence.
I'm sorry, to be part of what?
Weren't you a part of the book Painted Eloquence with us? Weren't you one of the co-authors?
Oh, no, I've been working on my own book, which is Things I've Learned Along the Way.
Okay.
And,
all right, so talk to us about that.
That is due out to be published on December 2015. And what that is what I decided. I started on one track, and I started on the track of I want to tell my story. But then when I started doing radio shows as an expert, I realized how little information people actually knew about. Like, things that I thought the common person knew about, I was realizing through the radio shows that they had no idea. They had no idea to how to detect whether they were depressed or not, or whether they were suicidal or not, or whether, I mean, I just did a show on cutting yesterday, and I talked about why are the reasons that people cut, because most people think that the reasons people cut are because they're suicidal, and that's not the case. And so what I want my book to focus on is my journey through depression and other mental health issues, but also to educate people on, okay, what do I need to do if I suspect that I am part of this particular group of, you know, people that are depressed or people that are struggling with anxiety or cutting, or, you know, what do I need to do? What's my next step? Because I'm just realizing more and more that people don't have the information, and you take for granted when you work in psychology, I think, you take for granted that people are thinking along the same lines that you are, that they know what to look for, but they don't.
We are actually at the 90-second mark, so would you tell us how we can reach you and where we can find more information about you?
Yes, I can be reached on Facebook on Things I've Learned Along the Way. That's the title of my Facebook page. And that's the title of my book that's due out in December. And so if you'd like to contact me, you can contact me that way. And if you have any specific questions, you can contact me at jeanday319@yahoo.com.
Jean, it has been a pleasure to finally connect and circle around with you. And I'm so thrilled for the work that you do. And namaste, my love. And I'll talk to you on the other side.
Okay, thank you so much, Rusty.
You're welcome, my dear. You're listening to Living and Thriving with Rusty. And guess what? I'm Rusty. It's Sunday night. We're grooving here in Living and Thriving Land with Jean Dane, who's an amazing woman, instructor, and Buddhist practitioner. I'm super thrilled that next Sunday is my book signing at Laura May's. So if you're local, come and see me. I need a big hug and into a Wednesday. Know that I love you. Know that you're beautiful. Know that I'm so thrilled to walk this path alongside you and live and thrive. Don't forget, smiling is the best contagion. So go out and give somebody a smile.
Thank you.
You're listening to Living and Thriving with Rusty.